From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're getting a preview of a lecture that's happening this Saturday, January 25th at Florida Gulf Coast University called Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy. The title comes from the title of the latest book by our guest, Dr. Joseph Nye. He's a University Distinguished Service Professor Emeritus and former Dean of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. From 1977 to 79, he was deputy to the Undersecretary of State for Security Assistance, Science, and Technology, and chaired the National Security Council Group on Nonproliferation of Nuclear Weapons. During the Clinton administration, he served as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, and he chaired the National Intelligence Council. His more than a dozen books include The Future of Power, The Power Game, a Washington novel, and most recently, Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy from FDR to Trump, which works through each presidency from FDR to President Trump, and scores their foreign policy on three ethical dimensions of their intentions, the means they used, and the consequences of their decisions. He joins us by phone from his home in Boston. Professor Nye, welcome to Gulf Coast Life. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
To engage with us and your fellow listeners about this conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, how do you define morals or morality for the purpose of this book and what it's exploring?
Well, morals are things that we do because we feel we ought to do them. They're a little different from things we do because they're convenient or useful or advance our interests. And I'm interested in the question of whether, if you look back at history, whether presidents sometimes did things not simply because of what was in the national interest, but because they felt they ought to, or even more interesting, when they defined the national interest as including things that were things they thought the country ought to do.
Is your book focused on foreign policy entirely or mostly, or flesh that out?
The book is about foreign policy. The general arguments that people make about foreign policy is that everything is just national interest because in international politics there's no higher court to enforce the law, and therefore people just act in national interest. Or one way to put it is that interests bake the cake, and then politicians sort of sprinkle a little moralism on it as icing to make it look pretty. And I was interested in going back in history and seeing with each of the 14 presidents who've been in office since 1945, whether if you had that view that morals don't matter, you got history right or wrong. And I think I've shown in the book that if you had that simple view, you were going to get history wrong.
So your new book, Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy, focuses on the 14 presidents since 1945. It establishes a scorecard for each president's ethical decisions. Can you start by breaking down how that scorecard works, what metrics it uses, that sort of thing?
Well, generally, Americans tend to substitute moralism for morality. You know, moralism means if we say something that sounds very nice, a freedom agenda or supporting democracy, that's morality. But if in the effort to produce that we produce bad consequences, then that's not really a moral outcome. So I argue that we need three-dimensional reasoning about this. Three-dimensional means you look at the motives, the means, and the consequences. So it's not enough just to say something like, I'm in favor of freedom or democracy. You also have to choose means that can implement it, and then you have to make sure that the consequences turn out to be good rather than unintendedly bad. So I call that 3D morality, and my scorecards look at each president from those three perspectives.
So least ethical or moral president based on that criteria since 1945?
Well, I rank the 14 presidents in three categories. The top quartile are Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, and George H.W. Bush, the first President Bush. And the bottom quartile are Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, the second President Bush, and temporarily at least, Donald Trump. And I say temporarily because he hasn't finished his term. So in grading, we would say he gets an incomplete. But as of now, his record would put him down in that category. And then the middle, it's spread out between those two upper tier and bottom tier.
So for somebody like you who is a historian, a political historian, you know a lot more about the broad scope of history than we do. Which would you think would be one that the general public might have considered a moral or ethical president in terms of their foreign policy actions, but your rubric actually came up with something that is incongruous with what most people might think?
Well, a good example of this is Bush 43, the second President Bush. Ari Fleischer, who was his press secretary, extolled his moral clarity because he spoke about a freedom agenda and democratizing the Middle East. Well, that's a noble set of motives or intentions, and I can give him credit for that, but he didn't pay enough attention to the means, which he didn't have the capacity to do that. And by trying to do it when you didn't have the capacity to do it, he made a terrible mess, which was actually helping al-Qaeda in Iraq, and which eventually led to the creation of ISIS, the Islamic State, and it also led to a civil war between Shia and Sunnis in Iraq, which killed many, many people, both Americans and Iraqis. So bad consequences. So Bush 43, good intentions, inadequate means, and unintended but bad consequences. So the question then is, well, you know, doesn't everybody make mistakes about consequences? What we want to look at is how carefully did somebody try to think through what the possible consequences would be. And the evidence is that the Bush administration didn't think very hard about this. There were a lot of documents from the State Department and the CIA, which said this is going to be very difficult to administer Iraq after you conquer it. And basically, the Bush White House ignored most of that. And the result is what, in the legal framework, you would call culpable negligence, the failure to really think hard about prospects of unintended consequences that would be immoral.
You have President Barack Obama in the middle of that quartile, or whatever you called it.
Right.
Can you reflect on how he did, what puts him in the middle, what makes him not near the bottom or the top?
Well, Obama, I think, made major efforts to have a moral foreign policy. I think his intentions were good. Some people would complain that on his means that he sometimes could have used force more effectively. He did use force, remember the killing of bin Laden. But the big complaint that many people have about Obama was his failure to follow through on his threat to strike Syria when they used chemical weapons. And that so-called red line that he drew and then failed to enforce led to a loss of credibility, not just in Syria and the Middle East, but around the world. And that's one of the major things that's held against him.
You mentioned that President Trump still gets an incomplete, but I guess he still has some data to fit into your metrics there. Has anything, or how much has it possibly changed since you sent the printer to, or sent the book, that is, to the printer? Because things are moving pretty fast these days.
Right. Well, Trump, interestingly enough, has not been very rash in his use of force. The recent events in Iran are a little different, but prior to that, he was pretty careful about his use of force, and he gets credit for that. Where he's not been very effective or very good has been his weakening of American alliances and of international institutions. And what The Economist of London has called his wrecking ball approach. The fact that he was careful about the use of force gets on the positive side of the ledger, but his general attitude of disdain for alliances and institutions weakens us in one of the areas where America is strongest, which is our ability to have allies and institutions. If you look at the competition we have with China, China has only one or two allies. America has about 65. And to throw away that asset is a big mistake.
Are there any times in history with presidents who've been as much of a wrecking ball when it comes to the global community as President Trump? I only have 25 years of paying attention to the world to refer to, but you probably have a bigger scope. Can you think about
it? Well, Richard Nixon put tariffs on to try to protect the dollar in 1971, and that was kind of a wrecking ball. But Nixon also had a larger strategy of where he was trying to go, and that led to things like the opening to China. I think in that sense, Nixon did use the wrecking ball, but he didn't use it all the time, or not as much as Trump does.
If you're just joining the show, I'm talking with Dr. Joseph Nye. He's a University Distinguished Service Professor Emeritus at Harvard University and former Dean of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He'll be in town this Saturday for a talk called Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy from FDR to Trump. It's part of Florida Gulf Coast University's Liebert World Affairs Lecture Series. If you'd like to comment on our conversation or engage with your fellow listeners, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. We're on Twitter. We're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I asked you to do this interview as near to when it will air as possible because we're living through kind of fluid times right now when it comes to the news of the day. By the way, this is being recorded Monday the 20th in the early afternoon. Is our never-ending, seemingly, news cycle that we're in something you've ever experienced before since you've been paying attention to the news?
Well, there's been a great shortening of time, and that is interesting because it puts more pressure for decisions without being able to take time to get all the information you need. So when John F. Kennedy was confronted with the Cuban Missile Crisis, where the Soviets put missiles in Cuba, he did something very interesting. If there'd been a decision in the first day or two, it probably would have been an airstrike, which we now know might have led to war, and that could have escalated to nuclear war, because the Soviets actually had nuclear weapons in Cuba. What Kennedy did was buy time by creating a new organization that he called the Executive Committee, and to stretch out the crisis. It lasted nearly 14 days, but GATT gave them time to get a better understanding of the situation and bargain with the Soviets, so that Kennedy gets great credit in retrospect for avoiding a nuclear war. Some people say it's the closest we have ever come to a nuclear war. People say that it would be impossible to do that nowadays because of the intensity of the news cycle and how short the cycles are. I don't know whether that's completely true. After all, Obama was able to plan the killing of bin Laden and to keep it quiet. But by and large, there's such a short cycle on news that the time for a president to reflect and to get extra information is much more difficult nowadays.
And there's just so much information that's available to us, it's difficult to choose which to pay attention to because we've only got so much attention to pay. You know, I was reading an essay the other day about somebody, this is kind of adjacent to what we're talking about, but they were speculating whether we were really ready for the internet as a species, as a humanity, because, you know, we went, you know, a long time being able to just talk to our neighbor, and then we can talk to one person somewhere else, and now we can talk to anyone, anywhere, anytime, all of us, and it's just, well, we're now living in that.
And the danger with that is it can be manipulated, as the Russians did in 2016, where they took Facebook, where we can talk to each other, you know, and so-called friend each other. And the Russians set up phony accounts to cause trouble and create chaos in the United States. So they turned our advantage in terms of being at the forefront of the internet, they turned it against us.
You've heard the term fire hose of falsehood, maybe?
Yes, exactly. That's the problem.
Yeah, it harkens back to, I think it was Mark Twain who said something like, you know, a lie can make it halfway around the world before the truth puts its boots on or something like that.
Exactly.
And now we've got, you know, 10,000 lies an hour or something, and it's pretty frightening.
Yep, it is a different world.
I read a piece that you wrote back in 2011 for foreignpolicy.com that was a response to Fareed Zakaria, who had written an essay in Time called Are America's Best Days Behind Us? And your rebuttal basically said that, you know, we have a system of checks and balances in this country. You didn't think that America's best days were behind us. And you did say you were concerned about the excessively partisan politics and mistrust that's happening in government. That's 9 years ago now. Can you reflect on where you would have been then and whether which direction, I think I know the answer, but which direction we've gone in terms of A, the power of our checks and balances, and B, the partisanship?
Well, the partisanship has gotten much worse. So what I worried about then has gotten worse. But the interesting question is how well are the checks and balances holding? President Trump has shown a degree of disdain for institutions and has tried to basically turn the presidency to very personalistic approaches. For example, the type of apparatus that's used to prepare decisions in prior administrations, the deputies committee and so forth, are generally reported to have atrophied. But on the other hand, the role of the courts remains independent. The press remains independent. We're about to see how independent or not the Congress will be. So there are still checks and balances that were put in place by James Madison and the other founding fathers. The question is, will they be damaged or not? And we are in the middle of watching that.
This next, it's kind of a question. It falls into the category of I've only been paying attention to this for about 20 years or a little longer, and you've got a bigger picture. But to me, it feels like right now, it's almost like politically and to some degrees culturally speaking, we don't have a Venn diagram between the two sides where there's an overlap, but just two circles that sit next to each other. Does that resonate with you at all, or is this just something that we go through periodically here in the United States?
Well, it's true that there are areas that the two circles don't overlap, but then there are also some areas where things do get done. You know, if you look at some of the work that's been done on the defense organization or authorization, if you look at some of the efforts on cybersecurity and so forth, they don't get the same degree of publicity that you get on the hyper-partisan issues, but there is a little overlap of the circles. So I think that it's too bad there isn't more overlap, but they're not totally disconnected. And it's also true, if you look back historically, there have been periods where we've had rougher periods even than we have today. I think you could say the 1930s were that sort, and sometimes the 1960s when the disputes over Vietnam.
You were deputy to the Undersecretary of State for Security Assistance, Science and Technology, and chaired the National Security Council group on non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. That was from 77 to 79. And then during the Clinton administration from 94 to 95, you served as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs. And what I'm setting up is, how often were words like ethical and moral literally part of the discussions that you were a part of regarding foreign policy decisions?
Well, they did come up from time to time. I remember when I was in the Defense Department and we were wondering how to respond to the actions in Sarajevo and Srebrenica, and I think the moral issues did get mentioned. When the Bosnian Serbs massacred the Muslims in Srebrenica, there was a feeling that they'd crossed a moral line on that. So there were situations where morals came up.
So this book you've written that's just come out, Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy from FDR to Trump. When did you first come up with the idea to write this book and then start putting pen to paper?
Well, a couple of years ago, I've been thinking about this question for a while, both from my government service and then trying to teach about it after I came back to Harvard. And I thought, well, maybe I'll try to write it down. So people often say, oh, this is a book about Trump. No, it started long before Trump.
Are you concerned about where we might be heading in this country, or is this just one of the ebbs and flows that we go through?
Well, I am somewhat concerned, but I also think in the larger picture of things that this is an ebb and flow. I mean, as I mentioned, I think the 30s and the 60s were even worse.
You got a next book that you're working on that you can tease for us?
Not yet. I'm still trying to, to master this one in terms of, the book tour and the rest of that. So I haven't thought through what's the next step, but I expect there'll be one.
Okay. Well, that is all the time. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, it's a pleasure to have a chance to talk, and I'm looking forward to my lecture at the end of the week.
All right, that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Joseph Nye, is a University Distinguished Professor Emeritus at Harvard University and former Dean of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's also author of many books, the latest being Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy from FDR to Trump, which just came out. He'll be in town this Saturday for a talk called Do Morals Matter? Presidents and Foreign Policy. It's part of Florida Gulf Coast University's Liebert World Affairs Lecture Series. Professor Nye, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Life is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thank you for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.